also watched last night on television, if you were sitting in front of the tube.
Yep.
No baseball game, which it turned out was a good thing. because I was already distracted. And a baseball game with a hockey game, and believe it or not, a soccer game would have probably been too much to handle.
And you know what, Buck? I actually, at one point, you're right, the hockey's going, the soccer's going, and I'm saying, where's my baseball game? Because there has been a baseball game, you know, for the past week or so. Yeah. And I said, I mean, 9:37 first pitch, Dodgers or Giants. And then I realized, oh yeah, it's tomorrow. So,
yeah, I honestly, John, had to check in the middle of the night because I was flipping over to see if the baseball game was on.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't sure that they weren't playing until Thursday, but anyway, so we have that to look forward to tonight, but we can talk about that down the road. Many people watching hockey games, certainly in Edmonton, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Toronto,
Montreal.
But there was some percentage that were watching the soccer game. Canada played Panama last night as they continue to strive to qualify for the World Cup. Now, I'm gathering it was mostly footy fans who would have watched the soccer game almost under any circumstance because that's their preference. But as the evening progressed, I wonder how many were like me, who started with the hockey game, then flipped over to check out the soccer game, and then kept going back until the second half of the soccer game. And I watched almost all of that and abandoned the hockey game, to be very honest with you. And not for any particular reason other than what Canada did in that footy game last night was quite extraordinary.
Oof. Particularly the second half, Bob, when you consider how well they dominated in the first half and it was a draw by halftime. And I'm not being facetious. Did Panama get the ball across center field once in the second half?
They did. In fact, I know they did. They actually had a shot on goal in the second half, but not very often.
Not very often. And when they did, it was already 3 or 4-1.
Yeah.
I mean, Canada was all over them. It was unbelievable.
The real story, though, was the real emergence. And I say emergence because we've seen this kid play before and he's played well and we've heard about him. But last night, what he did will put him on the map forever. And his career in soccer is just beginning.
You should clarify that. You should clarify that because soccer fans are now saying, Bob, we've all known about this.
Well,
this was a transcendent moment. This was, as you said, guys who are watching hockey games flipping over. This wasn't a soccer moment in Canada. This was a sports moment in Canada.
Well, that's exactly what I meant for people.
I know, but I don't want you to be ripped on Twitter again. Okay?
I couldn't care less.
I don't want you ripped on
Twitter. They can whip me all they want. As you said, I first saw Alphonso Davies, heard about him when he was playing for Vancouver.
Yep.
What, 3 years ago?
Yep.
And really had no great appreciation of how good he was. Didn't see enough of him. And it's MLS soccer. It's, you know, not in the same stage. He's been playing at Bayern Munich. And I've heard anecdotally that he's really good.
And or to quote Mike Babcock.
Oh, he's a good player.
He's a good player.
And we've seen him in these international games of late, but last night was the pièce de résistance. Last night was the standout moment. And we're going to talk about that and Canada's win and what it all means. Our pal, our buddy, our chum, the proper Pie King, James Sharman will join us, when the podcast and radio show continues after these messages. McCowan, Shannon back with you, and our pal James Sharman joins us, footy expert. And I suspect a significant portion of this country, while perhaps many were focused on hockey games that were played last night, certainly in Toronto and Edmonton, spent some time watching the soccer game last night as Canada took on Panama in an important match. They were at home. Lots of chances in the first half, didn't get much out of it, and exploded in the second half. All in all, a 4-1 victory over Panama. Was it shocking to you, or did you see any of this coming?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Was it shocking? When Canada wins a World Cup qualifier 4-1, it's shocking to a certain degree. But then we look at this team and what it's been promising us since the pre-qualifying rounds. And we've seen this dynamic attacking force, which hasn't quite clicked up front in the most recent qualifiers. So we've been expecting something to happen at some point, this breakout party, so to speak. And that really happened last night. So I won't say I'm shocked by it. I thought it was coming at some point. The way it came, given that Alphonso Davies worldie, what a goal that was. That was perhaps a bit shocking. But
well, in Panama, the ball was in touch. So you mean?
hey, listen. There's no VAR in this qualifying campaign, thankfully. Listen, England won a World Cup once upon a time with a controversial ball going over a line, not going over a line. So listen, it's all good. It's all good. Adds to the mystique of the goal, and that's what this goal will become.
Now, is this our version of the Maradona's the hand of God?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I said that last night, actually. Yeah, this is in the context of Canadian soccer, you know, a World Cup qualifier, not a World Cup semifinal. This is our Maradona goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just something just so special. And yeah, I don't think we'll see a goal like that very often.
Well, even if you're not a soccer fan, to the lead up to the goal, to see where the Panamanian defenders are and to see where he is. And you say, by the way, in 8 seconds, this guy will have that ball. In my mind, truly amazing.
You know, if you just appreciate athleticism, I don't care if you like soccer or not, you know, just to watch that goal, and he had no business getting there that quickly. It was like watching a video game, you know, hammering the C button? I don't know. I haven't played video games in years.
Well, ask Bob. He's big into video games.
Yeah, I'm sure
he is. I'm not. But, well, look, continue, James. Continue.
Yeah, well, I mean, just seeing how he got to that ball so quickly. I think the guy had a 40-yard head start on him, it looked like. And then not just to win the ball, but the little deft touch between his legs to keep the ball in, so to speak. And then the composure to turn his defender and knock it left-footed to that corner. I mean, what a goal. That's as good a goal as you're going to see. And I can't remember in all my years watching sports a pure demonstration of raw pace than that goal. We've seen it perhaps defensive plays from Alphonso in the past, but I don't think there's a quicker player in world football than Alphonso Davies. Maybe in world sport. I mean, that was ludicrous. This guy would be making 100-meter finals, I'm sure of it, if he switched to track and field. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, 2 points on that. First of all, the thing that shocked me about it was that he actually ran that hard for that distance for a ball that wasn't clearly going to be his. You just don't see that very often. You know, at some point, I kept saying, okay, he's gonna back off and say, okay, I can't get that one. But he was running at full pace for, I don't know, 40 yards, 50 yards, just to get to a ball, and then barely got there, basically at the same time as the defender. So that's number one, the fact that he put out that kind of effort. But then secondly, the linesman was right on top of the play and did not call it out. Now, I know you look at replays a lot, and we all saw a lot of replays there. In your mind, was that ball still in?
From the angles that I saw, I think it may have just about been in, just about, very close.
That means it was out.
Probably,
it was,
yeah.
It was out.
Right.
But
the fact is, though, guys, this is CONCACAF, right? Canada's been screwed on such plays so many times in the past, right? Yeah. If it was Canada in 10 years ago, that ball's out and the flag's going up. Right. Things are changing. The world of football is changing over here. We're getting these calls now. We've got a team playing the dark arts, being real, as we call it in sport, in soccer, shithouses, we call them. You know, they're doing things that used to be done to us. So I think the planets have shifted somewhat in the soccer world.
You know, James, in professional sports in North America, normally big stars get good calls. You know, LeBron always gets the call. Are in what you're talking about, are you suggesting that, because we now, for the layman, we have a really good bunch of high profile players playing in really good leagues all over the world. Are we getting calls now?
That's a really good point, which I hadn't really thought of, but you could be right. We now have the best player maybe in the region, if I say in the region, certainly on the pitch last night, a guy that's becoming a household name in the football world.
Right.
And he's probably is getting calls to a certain degree. That being said, there was a penalty call in the first half where he was brought down the box. And for me, that was a stonewall penalty. It wasn't given.
Right.
And it's like, okay, here we go. We're getting CONCACAF again here. So we're not, I don't think the conversion has happened 100% just yet, John, but certainly we're getting calls that perhaps in the past we wouldn't have been getting.
And to me last night, the other thing was at halftime, you know, Canada really did outplay them in the first half. At halftime at 1-1, let me suggest the 1990 qualifying team might have lapsed, might have sagged. This team didn't sag. They put the pedal to the metal.
You know, we've seen this team throughout the campaign go behind in games and concede goals, but show that resiliency and that confidence to come back and score again and get a draw, or in this case, get a win. And that comes down to the mentality instilled by John Herdman. I mean, he's walked into this team at just the right time. He knew this great group of players are coming through. But he's done what he did with the women's team, and that was make them punch really above their weight and believe in themselves. So you're right. Previous editions would have quit. Oh, man, we're down to Panama. Here we go again. But they didn't quit, and they found their game. And quite frankly, they went down 1-0, and they're still playing really good football. They're the better team in that first half. And I really think they used the fans too. I mean, there's almost 30,000 fans there at a Canadian soccer match, and they were Canadian fans. I mean, yeah. My word. You don't see that very often. And they drew on that energy as well. So all these sporting cliches about the 12th man and sport, it does make a difference. And I think we saw that yesterday. But yeah, there's a self-belief in this team that just hasn't been there ever before, I don't think.
By the way, just before Bob asked a question, can you imagine when Davies returns in November, they're playing in Edmonton. It's not going to be as warm as it was last night in a stadium twice the size of BMO. We could see 66,000 people in Edmonton for that game.
And you guys know better than me, but I mean, Edmonton support their sports teams very well.
Absolutely. And they support their logo. I mean, they support their locals. And there's a, you know, every guy in Edmonton and Northern Alberta right now has their chest out saying that's our guy. So, I mean, I could see 60,000 at Commonwealth Stadium. I really could.
And this isn't just a local kid coming home. This is a guy that's just become the poster boy of the sport in this country, and a guy that's doing more for the sport in this country than I think we've ever seen before. I was there last night, and half an hour after the game finished, everyone's off the field, but out comes Fonzie again for selfies with the fans, climbed into the stands. You know, this is a guy that is a Bayern Munich star, one of the top stars in world football. He doesn't need to do that, but he does it anyway, and he's just becoming beloved by this country, and Edmonton will, I'm sure they will, celebrate him in absolute style.
With James Sharman. Okay, so for those of us who are, and I say this loosely, casual soccer fans, and you will acknowledge that may be even an overstatement on my
very part. Loosely.
Yeah, but okay, put this guy in context in terms of world appreciation, world ranking. How much notice has he received over the past year or so in terms of the game internationally?
He's becoming well-known. He's getting votes now for the Ballon d'Or. You know, he won't be winning this award, but he'll be getting votes. You know, he'll be getting respect from captains and from journalists around the world. We're seeing him perform in big games too, in the Champions League, the biggest stage in world football. He's putting in man-of-the-match performances. And people are saying, who is this kid? He's a highlight reel. And so far, the highlight reel has been through his defensive play, how he'll track back and get back in position when maybe he's out of position through his sheer pace. And people love watching that. It looks great on television. It's great in the stadium. And the fact that he's playing for Bayern Munich, who is arguably the best team in world football right now. They've won a Champions League, you know, a couple of years ago now. They win the German crown every single year. People love him. People respect him. And, you know, the fact that he's Canadian hasn't helped him, I guess, in that regard. But he's putting
us
on the map now.
What do you mean by that?
Because there's been, I mean, listen, how many well-known top quality Canadian internationals have there been over the years? I can think of a handful. You know, Paul Stolteri at in Germany, Werder Bremen, Spurs. Obviously, my mate Craig Forrest, what was up there as well.
Well, maybe our best one decided he wasn't Canadian.
Jonathan de Guzman, 100%. Yeah, exactly, right? So there aren't many, but no one, and even Craig will admit this, no one's been on this level before. He's taking it to a brand new level. This is a guy that's not just playing in a top league, but he's dominating in the top tournament, which is the Champions League as well, what he's worth now. I mean, if they sold him today, he'd be close to $100 million. That's what he'd be costing for a guy that's evolving and getting better. He's a fullback by nature. That's a defensive player, but he's played in the midfield as a winger and recently up front for Bayern Munich and played up front in a two last night for Canada. So even Bayern Munich and their coach, Julian Nagelsmann, is realizing this kid isn't going to be a defender for much longer. And when he starts scoring the goals, guess what? You get the notoriety and you get on the cover of EA Sports, FIFA, that kind of stuff. And that isn't beyond the realms of a possibility for this kid.
So he plays in Germany. Where does German soccer rank in terms of world respect? Does this guy have to play in the Premiership or in Spain or Italy in order to get that recognition?
No, German football, it's top four in the league, in the world, probably top three at this point. And Bayern Munich is considered one of the most storied and most successful teams in world football. Sure. You've seen the biggest names go there. Pep Guardiola, the most famous manager in world football, coached there for 3 years. That being said, you know, at some point, would you like to see him play for a Real Madrid or a Barcelona and get that glitz and glamour? It'd be nice to watch, but, you know, he won't lose respect if he stayed at Bayern Munich. The Premier League is still the most watched league in the world. Certainly over in Canada, it's the most watched league. So, yeah, I'd love to see him come over to England at some point. But at this point, why leave Bayern Munich? You have everything you want there.
In fairness, though, this is not a one-player team. The guys they have up front, the guys they do have in the midfield, all contribute. And I'm not the soccer guy, but depth is one of the stories of why this team is doing what it's doing, correct?
It might be the story, John. I mean, I'm so amazed by the depth. This team last night beat Panama 4-1. Panama's a very good team without their captain, Atiba Hutchinson, who's been their best player for 15 years, you know, prior to Alfonso, you know, rising above. Without Kyle Larin, their top scorer, a guy that's going to smash the all-time Canadian record very, very soon. Mm-hmm. Without Junior Hoyler, a guy that played many years in the top flight of English football. This is a team that does it with injuries, with suspensions. Tejon Buchanan, this kid, he's just moved to Club Bruges in Belgium. He missed the last game through suspension. He was behind Alfonso, the best player in the field yesterday. 22 years of age, dynamic, exciting player. He's going to go from Bruges to a bigger club in the next 2 or 3 years. You have depth throughout the lineup. Guys emerging through MLS, Alistair Johnston, this fullback. Right. He's just fun to watch. He's tenacious. He's a guy that halftime comes and goes, we love this. We're tough. We're Canadian. We like it when the going gets rough. This is a hockey player playing soccer. You know, that's why I think this country is going to eventually... Even Bob is going to eventually embrace this team.
Well, hey, listen, it's hard not
to... Careful.
Last night, with as much hockey was on and TNT's debut, in my house, one of those TVs wasn't going off the soccer game. It wasn't. And part of it was the team, and the other part was how great the crowd was. So, for me...
Well, John, I'm looking at your video here, and you've got two TVs stacked on top of each other. So, would be difficult.
There's another one there, and there's another one over there. So there's four of them here.
Yeah. I want that one day.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll trade you for a few pies.
Done. But you're right, though. You know, I'm reading all the usual suspects this morning in the various websites. So watching the usual suspects on the highlight shows, and Canada Soccer's up top. It's near the top of the show, you know, and they're talking about it. And this is a night where the Leafs, you know, kicked off. You know, what do you call it in hockey? Iced off. I don't know how you call it.
Faced off
the first time this season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it says something, right? That wouldn't have been the case 10 years ago, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. I think you have the two pieces of a story that draw headlines in this game last night. You have a victory, first of all.
And you have the Maple Leaf.
Well, yeah. And you have a star player and a guy who, look at, if for a non-soccer guy, of course I'd heard of Alfonso Davies and I'd heard of Jonathan David and I knew a little bit about these guys and what they were potentially capable of doing. But if you watched last night, if you saw the Davies goal, you had to be impressed. And the reaction of the announcers and the crowd and in general, you know, you don't have to be an aficionado of the game to appreciate the greatness of that play. And that's, I mean, so you had the perfect storm, a victory in an important game and a player at what, 20 years of age, who may almost assuredly will be the greatest soccer player this country has ever produced.
Is already. Yeah.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Okay. I'll buy that. Is already. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, Wayne Gretzky at age 17 or 18 when he went to the Edmonton Oilers, or you know, all kinds of comparables.
I think what we need and what we had last night, and I think most teams need this, or sports, that moment, that moment you can now, when you think of Canada playing, I think we're going to think of that goal.
Of course you will.
Some good results. And I think 100%. That occasion, and every great team, good team, has that moment when that tipping point where they become from being a good team to having something. Oh, yeah, remember that day when Alphonso scored that goal? I was there. Where were you? It was a where were you moment for Canadian soccer. And I understand it's just qualifying. And so far, you know, the team's accomplished nothing. I understand that. But for Canadian soccer to be where they're at, you know, and to hang their hat on that goal and that player, that's a huge stepping stone, I think, for this team to become part of the sporting narrative in this country.
You know, 1986, when they went to the World Cup last, we didn't score a goal. We couldn't score a goal. You know, as great as those players were, that, and some of them I know, including Leonard Uzi, you know, we worked hard, but we couldn't score. We had no skill up front. What has changed in our country that says we can create skillful soccer players as opposed to grunts?
I think part of it is the world's got a lot smaller in sport. So you can be a good player and you're going to be discovered by someone and taken to a big club at some point, or get the opportunity somewhere else. Coaching's improved. The game very slowly has become more professional here, very slowly. And we're still not there just yet. But, you know, with MLS being born in 2007 here in this country, that professionalized the sport to a certain degree, and it's slowly filtering down. More kids are playing football now in more organized football. I think it's just the world itself has got smaller, you know, and Alphonso Davies may have been an Alphonso 30 years ago, but he wasn't discovered. He wasn't seen by anyone, never got that chance. Mm. It happened now and again, like Craig Forrest got his opportunity at 16. He went over to England. He was, you know, he's a late starter, but he was discovered by someone at Ipswich and West Brom too, where he almost joined as well.
So didn't hurt. He was 6'5" as a goaler.
Didn't hurt at all. Yeah. For a 16-year-old kid. Yeah, precisely. But you know, he just wasn't, and unless you had connections or you at the right club had connections, it didn't happen. Now, if you're good enough, you'll be seen. Someone's going to see you.
Yeah.
But there is a development process in all sport. And the best way to develop is to be surrounded by the best players you possibly can be. And don't you think that a lot of this success, and it's not just Davies or David, it's almost across the board. These are kids who are getting getting an opportunity to play with high profile clubs around the world with great coaching and surrounded by great players. And in the process of being surrounded by great players, stuff rubs off.
Yeah, it does.
And you learn to play a different way.
On the other hand, though, some players shrink under that pressure.
You sure?
You know, you always hear about these kids who are dominant at 14 and 15 and 16. You read biographies of top players. Man, John Smith, when I was 15, he was the best player at every time I played. He's incredible. Went to Man United, never made it. Couldn't handle the pressure. So I think you have a certain mental makeup as well. And Alphonso Davies, John David, Carl Larin, a team, but they have this. They'll go to a club like Bayern Munich. And most of us thought Fonzie would be loaned out to a smaller club at some point. He goes from Vancouver Whitecaps of MLS, a struggling MLS team, to Bayern Munich. A lot of kids would say, okay, I need a couple of years here to learn the language, learn how things work in this country. I'm going to go to a small club, be loaned out. That's what we all thought would happen. And within a month, he's made the first team squad. And within, you know, 6 weeks, he's playing for the first team and hasn't looked back. And that's a lot to be said about him, I think, you know,
I agree.
His makeup.
Well, yeah, it is, though, quite extraordinary that the way this has come together after, well, decades of futility, where there's really no level of optimism. You know, any kind of success is heralded, but it never appeared to be sustainable.
Well, but even
literally a blink, and now you've got a team that, well, who knows where they could go?
To the point where Bob and I, listen, we were all guilty of it. We would mock them. We would make fun of this program,
of course,
because they got to number 55 in the world. You know, 55. God, what if we get to the 40s? It must have been difficult at times for guys who, you know, have great professional lives to come back to Canada and, you know, give their heart and soul for the country and in many ways not be appreciated.
Oh, boy, you hear the stories all the time. Some of these ex-pros, you know, and they came over to Canada and they're flying coach. And they're being treated like they're amateurs by their association. And you wonder why they bother coming. And right. They're going to some dark region of CONCACAF, some awful stadium in the middle of nowhere. And it has changed. But I think we should also take a breath in that this is a great moment and we should be celebrating it. But they haven't accomplished anything just yet, right? This could still be derailed. And I think longtime Canadian observers still kind of expect something to go wrong at some point. I've seen no evidence to suggest it will, but that dark passenger on my shoulder thinks, man, they're playing Costa Rica next and they're not a bad team. They could lose that. And then they're playing Mexico. They could lose that. And before you know it, they're in fifth place looking outside, looking in, right?
Yeah.
But you mentioned Mexico, James. And I was just about to say, as impressive as last night was, maybe the draw in Mexico was as impressive and as indicative of the fact that this team may be now maybe over the hump, at least the CONCACAF hump. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, no one expected, except perhaps for Canada, expected them to go to the Azteca Stadium, one of the most, you know, storied, historic, intimidating stadiums in world sport. They've never won there before, never won there in all the times they played there, which is a lot. And to go there and get a well-earned draw where at times they were the better team in that match, mm-hmm. I mean, that turned some heads for sure. And that probably just added to this confidence and this gusto, which is why the Jamaica game was a bit of a letdown next time out. Now, that being said, it was an awful pitch, you know, it was some suspensions, but that was a bit of, okay, back to reality here. And then 4-1 Panama, and here we go again. But yeah, that result, to do that against a Mexican team that isn't the same as it once was, perhaps, but it's still Mexico. It's still a footballing nation. It's still the best team in the region, is extremely impressive. And just show that this team should qualify for a World Cup with those types of results.
We want to get to a little bit more on this and then the after effects of last night's game. All the stuff that...
Why, were you out partying, Bob, or what?
I was not out partying, but Canada was trying to party and Panama was more than just a little pissed off. And we want to address that situation. James Sharman is with us. We'll pause and come back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon and James Sharman, our soccer guru, is with us as Canada beat Panama last night 4-1. They're now third in the play in this qualifying. Top three. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Sharman. Top three get in automatically. The fourth has to go to some kind of other playoff.
Another play-in turn. A play-in turn. By the way, here's the most important question of the whole show, James. Is it Qatar or Cotter?
I have no idea. I use whatever comes out of the mouth, you know, different times, different pronunciations. Okay. Just own the word. You know, you're broadcasters. Just own it when you say
that's
it.
That's right. Fine. Okay, so going to Qatar would be a big thing. Going to Qatar would be the next step for this.
Well, that's the whole
federation.
Objective right here.
Yeah.
You know, that's step number one, isn't it?
Yeah. But are we better than the Americans?
No, we're not. And listen, the States is similar to Canada in that they're a young team, they're developing, they've had a bit of a lull, that they're transitioning between the old guard and the new guard. Their new guard is still very good. The gap's closer than it's been for a long time, and who knows, maybe it will be, you know, even Steven. I don't know. We did tie them, of course, in the States last time out. But yeah, you know, they got some really good players playing at really big clubs, mm-hmm. perhaps more so than Canada. That being said, the big clubs that their players are at, some of those clubs are also in transitional time right now, and those players wouldn't necessarily have been playing for those teams. Like Dest, for example, great young player, but he's at Barcelona. He's playing each week. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't be playing if it was 3 years ago. Right. But I still think that the player pool, the money invested, is still so much greater in the States. They're still going to be a little bit ahead of Canada at the moment.
Well, I acknowledge your hesitancy, and I understand it, because, you know, Canadian soccer fans have been disappointed so many times for so long. It's almost impossible to be optimistic. And yet, we talked about the Mexico game. They get a draw on the road in Mexico. They get a draw on the road in Nashville, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Against the U.S.
Yeah.
The two teams that we... If Canada isn't the best team in this group, and maybe they aren't, but it's Mexico and the U.S. and then Canada and the rest. But you got two road games, and you got draws out of both of them. You got two home games still to come with those two teams.
Yeah,
maybe the expectations aren't unrealistic.
Maybe you're right. You know what? You could be right, and we're going to see Mexico come to Edmonton, right, in a month from now. Where they're at. I mean, listen, the fact that we can have the conversation that maybe Canada is the best team, it might be, you know, a one-sided conversation, but the fact that we can have that conversation without being laughed at just shows how far this program's come. And who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I think we'll have accepting, well, third place would be great. That's a victory, but that's almost a defeatist attitude born from the failures of the last 30 years.
Of course.
Right? So, hey, I'm with you. Why not? Let's give this team a chance to prove us wrong.
Let me ask you this question too. I'm leapfrogging ahead, but is there any advantage to finishing first in this group as opposed to third in the group?
Yeah, there'll be pots in the draw itself, and that'll be based on FIFA rankings. And obviously, if they beat Mexico, for example, they get
the ranking goes way up.
Yeah. Now, whether they can do enough to catch Mexico, for example, I don't know. I suspect that's not the case. But it does help if you finish first in your group because it just get the world ranking points.
Just for clarification, do you know what the rankings are for the US, Mexico, and Canada right now?
Canada, I believe, was 51 last time I saw. Mexico and the States, good question. Top 10, Mexico for sure. The States might be just on the periphery there somewhere, but I haven't, you know, I hate the rankings. It really,
yeah, I get it.
It means nothing. It's so hard to have a world ranking system when not everyone's playing each other. You know, they're so weighted, the games and who you're playing, but they do count, sadly, for quite a lot in that regard.
So they do have to go to Panama to play one more time, correct?
Yeah, and that's going to be an experience.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
Well, let's talk about it in the context of what happened last night. So the Panamanians get wiped out in the second half, and they're understandably pissed just because they got beat, and they got beat soundly. But the kerfuffle that went on for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes?
It's like waves
at the end
of
the game?
It was waves of it, yeah. You know, it began back in I think, the first half. There was a corner for Panama. And this is what I love about Canada now. And I mentioned before this shithousery. So you have Daniil Henry, who's a sub. He's not playing for Canada. He's a sub. He's warming up on the sidelines. And he's kneeling down to tie his bootlace by the corner flag. Panama win a corner. And he's in the way of the player taking the corner, and he refuses to move, just being a complete, you know what, refuses to move. And the player gets really angry, gets in his face. The bench is clear. You know, there's this big commotion in the side there. It got quite nasty as well. Alfonso Davies is going bananas in there. It was actually a lot of fun to watch.
We got to get the violence out of soccer, James. We got to get the violence out of soccer.
Exactly. And then I think that carried over. There was an edge to the game from that point onwards. And then post-match, Panama was sulking. I'm sure part of it was, listen, boys, they're coming back to our park in a few months' time, and our fans are going to be nasty and angry. Let's build this. Let's set this up for something and see how tough these guys really are. And that is a concern. But I don't know. You know, I spoke to Stevie Caldwell, who, you know, played for Scotland, sure. Long-time player. He's a hard-nosed centre-half. He's tough, Stevie, real tough. I've played against him in a charity match. Even now, he's tough. And he's getting angry. He said, what are they doing? Why would he play into the hands of Panama? And he made complete sense. But on the other hand, I like the edge that Canada showed there. I like the fact that they didn't back down. They weren't intimidated. Previously, you know, in CONCACAF games, they've been intimidated. So I like the pushback a little bit. But they might rue that in a few months' time.
Dare I remind everybody of 2016 and all we had to do to go to Honduras?
And
James, what was the final score?
Nine.
I think it was I thought it was 8-1.
It wasn't 9-0. It was 8-1.
8-1. We scored first, actually.
But they quit, right? That was an example, prime example, a team that quit and wilted under the pressure.
And when you talk about going to Panama and playing there in front of the home crowd, it's not just a game. It is when you check into the hotel and the fans' cars are in the streets below the hotel and they honk their horns all night. So nobody's going to sleep in the hotel that night before the game. It is a religious rite in many of these countries for a World Cup qualifier. And these guys, I think, are hardened enough and used to it, but it's a fact of life. And then we're going to be talking about throwing the bags of urine on. We know we're going to get the bags of urine thrown on the pitch at all. Used diapers being
tossed in the field. But you know what? I mean, yeah, I think they're tough enough. I think they're resilient enough to deal with that. But and every time I expect this team to take a step backwards and to wilt, they don't. They come forward in the front for every single time. But they haven't yet seen that environment. Even at the Azteca last week, great result and all, but it wasn't a packed Azteca. It wasn't like it would be later in qualifying.
It shouldn't have been anybody in the place, James. There shouldn't have been anybody in the place.
Just, yeah, I mean, my God. But it's FIFA are cowards, right? So why would they enforce any stadium ban after that continues for, what, 10 years now?
Well, they should be another ban coming.
There should be. And that was, if people are unaware, it's the homophobic chants in Mexican football.
Yeah.
It's been happening for 10 years now. It's been happening a lot recently in the internationals. And they get a little ban and they come back and they don't stop. The same as the Hungarian fans in UEFA right now. They just don't learn their lesson. And the governing bodies are too weak to actually make a stand.
We have talked a lot about the players and the cycle of development that has taken place to put Canada in a position where we can have this kind of a conversation, where we're not necessarily confident, but we are legitimately optimistic. Coaching plays some role in this. And John Herdman, when he came over to the men's side, I think there was a level of optimism that he might be the right guy at the right time. And you can coach your ass off. And if you don't have the players, it's not going to do much good. So I don't want to put too much emphasis on the significance of that he has had over the past few years on this program, but you know better than John or I, how good a coach might this guy be?
I think he's really good. Yeah. And, you know, when he made the jump from the women's team, there was a lot of conjecture and criticism about why would you hire a guy with no experience coaching men to run Canada's men's national program? And he speaks a good game, talks a big game, and he, you know, chatted himself into that role.
He's a good salesman.
He's a great salesman, but he's also a really good coach, and he's a very modern coach. Tactically, he's very aware, and he's got this team playing all variety of different systems. But what impresses me the most is what I mentioned before, how he has this team just believing in itself. And he puts so much credence on the confidence of the group. And we saw that with the women's team, now the men's team. He has every player wanting to play for him. And you can imagine how a lot of, if it's a veteran-laden team saying, yeah, by the way, we've got a new coach and he's only coached women before. You can imagine an old-school veteran-laden team resenting that and rebelling. So I think he knew what was around the corner, this young talent. And they were bought in too, to John Herdman's message. Mm-hmm. You speak to anyone that's coached with him, they're always very impressed with how meticulous he is and the depths he goes to in the modern coaching sphere, from the sleep studies to the nutrition, the diet, the analytics. He wraps it all into one umbrella, but he's also a real good football man who loves the sport, comes from the northeast of England, right? It's football country, Newcastle, right?
Sure.
He knows the game. He's seen it, the good, the bad, and the really ugly. So he's a football man through and through, but he's a very modern football man. And I think we give him so much credit. I wonder what's next for him. Obviously, he's looking to 2026 when we host a World Cup, at least 10 games in the World Cup. Beyond that, he's an ambitious guy. You don't get much more ambitious than John Herdman. I do wonder if he sees his future in club football.
Well, I was going to ask you that very question. I mean, at what point does a top-level club look at this guy and say, there's something here, we should at least be taking a look at him?
I would think it'd be pretty soon. I mean, my God, TFC are looking for a coach, at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Surely it's been
mentioned. Well, aren't we? I mean, I'm talking beyond that, to be honest with you.
But maybe that's the next step. I think it'll be a big jump for a European team, a decent-sized European team, huh? To get a Canadian men's coach and say, hey, guys, this is our new coach. He might have to either get an assistant job. I can see him jumping to MLS first, and I think he would walk into a job. Get past this World Cup. I think he's around at least 2026 because just hosting games, he's always mentioned that's huge for him. He's still quite a young guy. But beyond that, if he's successful for this campaign and gets another World Cup out of it in 2026, I think in MLS, he'll walk into a job in MLS, do a couple of years there, and then maybe he can get jumped to Europe once again. But you know, he loves Canada. He's a proud Canadian, to be honest with you. He really is.
You touched on it earlier that players were coming back in previous years and weren't getting treated as well here to play for Canada by hook or by crook, for whatever reason, that they were in their club teams, you know, in other sports. And, you know, we had Nick Nurse on talking about how he's going to help recruit players to play for Canada. A lot of it is how that relationship, not necessarily how you coach them, but a relationship in recruiting players to play for your country. Hockey Canada has always done a magnificent job. That's why hockey players want to play for us, because Hockey Canada is like the 33rd professional team in the NHL, and you get treated like a king. Is that one of John's strengths in how he treats the players? And so there is that relationship, you know, even if a guy's playing in Europe and he has to come home.
I think that's one of the understated talents of John Herdman, that he can convince people. We're seeing the young players he's bringing over. Stefan Eustachio, for example, a guy that he found and convinced to come over here, a guy that's been playing in Portugal, could have gone that route and didn't, because it's quite the selling job, right? Because let's be honest here, Canada soccer hasn't got much money. You're not going to be treated like Canada hockey, for example, will treat players. You just haven't got the money, as simple as that.
Right.
But it's amazing what winning does, right? And you have a successful team going to a World Cup, you can say, listen, come to our team. You'll play with Alfonso Davies. There's a draw there. You're playing with a guy that's got connections to the biggest European clubs in the world. You're seeing clubs, players making a leap in their careers through playing for the Canadian national team. So it's far more of a more compelling choice, I think, than it used to be when, man, it was tough. You'd take five flights to get across the Atlantic because it's cheaper, you know, than other routes. So things are changing, but you're never going to be treated like gold when you're here. Because it's just the money just isn't there right now. But if you're playing for a big European club, making lots of money, that's not that big a deal, I don't think. But I think you're right. I think John Herdman very much has been key to that. And he will convince you. Like I said, he's a salesman. He's got that smile, right? He's a wool in sheep's clothing in many ways because he's tough as well. But, you know, he could sell, you know, well, yeah. He could do a good job convincing anyone of anything.
Well, Cole to Newcastle. He could sell Cole.
That's a much better. I was going to go a different route, which would have been very inappropriate, but that's a much better way.
There you go.
for the ignorant like me, are there Canadian players playing around the world that are not playing for this team by choice?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, there are people out there who follow that very closely. There are a couple of young players still deciding, but most of them, I think, have been discovered now. And are being identified at a very young age and are getting capped pretty early, you know. So you're seeing more and more of that now. But they have to be, they're always digging up new names and finding, you know, it's amazing actually how football works, no matter what country you're playing. We're seeing it now with the biggest teams in the world. How you know, your passport only means so much. It's more about where your grandmother was born. Jamaica made a big point of it last 2 years, recruiting players from England in particular, who aren't Jamaican necessarily, but have some you know, lineage there, which gets them in the team. It's an interesting part of the modern sport, but modern soccer in particular, finding that talent, who cares whether they've been here or not.
But for clarity, what I'm really referring to, James, is are there players who were invited to play for this team who chose not to?
Not that I know of, not at the moment, no.
Oh, okay.
No. And if I have, it's because they're very quiet. There's no one out there who's a real solid player that we know is really good, who we're waiting on, as far as I know.
Okay, good.
At least no one playing in a top league anyway.
Well, it was an extraordinary night. And soccer fans don't get very many of these, or at least haven't had very many of these. Perhaps there are more to come. That is the level of optimism that exists here.
And to see a goal like that.
Well, that's the blueprint for attracting an audience, I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not just the win. Because that goal will serve as a promotional vehicle for years, literally. Not, you know, a lot of people saw it live last night. A whole bunch more saw it when they turned on their, you know, picked up their telephone this morning and started scanning through. And that will continue to be like the poster child for this team and in Canada, this sport, mm-hmm. for a long period of time. And where that leads is anybody's guess.
I think people that otherwise may have been, you know, on the outside looking in might now think, I've got a chance to go to Edmonton in November and see this kid, this Alphonso Davies kid play. I'm going to do that. You know, we want to see superstar players. And that goal, I think, may have created that. I haven't watched Sky Sports this morning just yet. I can't because it'd be an illegal stream and we can't be doing that. But I'm pretty sure they'll show that goal. I'm pretty sure they'll show that goal. And I guarantee you that they wouldn't have been showing Canada Panama highlights if not for that goal. So we'll wait and see.
It's I almost guarantee it. I wouldn't be able to fathom a level of understanding as to why they wouldn't show it. It was, you know, there are a lot of great goals. It wasn't, I don't know, was it the greatest goal I've ever seen? No, I don't think so. No.
Might have been the greatest Canadian goal you've ever seen.
Well, it was.
One of the greatest shows of athleticism I think we may have ever seen. Yeah. That's for sure, the sheer pace.
If you don't show it, it's because you're biased. And who can be biased against Canada? Everybody loves
us. We're so likable, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we are. Well, except for Shannon.
I was going to say that. So the two guys that I'm talking to, neither of you were born here, I don't think. And I'm the only one born here, and I'm getting ripped. It's good.
Well, we're glad you stayed.
Hey, how's the pie business?
It's going great, thanks. Yeah, we're in pie season, so things are getting a little bit crazy. We're trying to keep up.
James, it's like soup. 12 months a year is pie season.
That's what I've been saying. I've been trying to convince people of that, and we do sell pies in the summertime, just not quite as many as the wintertime.
Charmin's proper pies, and now you're delivering outside of Toronto, right?
Yeah, like we're expanding to Hamilton very soon. We'll be across the southern Ontario within the next few weeks. So just follow us on our social channels, and as soon as we expand, we'll let you know.
Charmin'sproper.com.
.ca.
.ca. Oh, .ca. Even better. Charmin'sproper.ca. Beautiful.
And John and I have both eaten.
I'm going to make an in-person visit.
Good stuff. Let me know when you're coming down, John.
Right on.
We'll take care of you.
Well, beautiful. Maybe Shannon can pick me up on the way now that we're kind of neighbors.
We don't want to stop.
Here's the problem with that. I would drive to the house. I would sit out front in my black SUV and Bob would sit in the back seat. That's what would happen.
I do believe that 100%.
Yeah. Well, what the hell's wrong with that? Seems very you guys make that sound like there's something abnormal about it.
And then demand a receipt at the end, you know?
Screw the receipt. If you take
the Uber sticker off your window, John, that might make it easier. We've all got to make a buck somehow these days.
Well, hey, you know,
look where we are, James.
I'd be happier, James, if he got a better car because the limo service I usually use, I don't need a stretch, but something nicer would be better than
my car is just fine for you,
the
sir.
67 Pinto that he picks me up in. No disrespect to Pinto or Ford.
I was going to say the Ford people are online too.
They don't still make the Pinto, do they? I don't think so.
No, they don't. Because in fact, with good cause, I think Mr. Nader had a big say in that.
Among others, yeah.
Bob,
Charmin, it's not often we get a chance to sit and chat and have a feel good day about Canadian soccer. So we're glad we had this opportunity, and we should tell people, you know, we booked you to come on the show before all this happened. Mm-hmm. So we really didn't know what we could have been talking about, another disappointing night or an unexpected draw or, you know, whatever. And as it turned out, one of the most memorable nights in Canadian soccer history. And we're thrilled that we got a chance to chat with you, and we're going to do it more often as we wade through this qualifying. Thank you.
Maybe we should do it from Edmonton.
Why are you going? Are we going? Who's going?
Well, maybe the show goes on the road to Edmonton to watch Alphonso live. You know, we never know.
Well, when you get Ford Pinto sponsorship,
that's right. Yeah, or the CharminProper.ca sponsorship.
Well, I'm not being presumptuous, but if someone wants to pick up the tab for the three of us to go to Edmonton to see the game in person and then do a show or two from there, I think we're all in for that. Okay.
We are. I think so.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
all right. There you go. The challenge has been registered. Sharman, we'll see you soon, pal. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Always enjoy it. Cheers.
James Sharman. We'll come back after these messages. Well, our thanks to the King of Pies, James Sharman, for joining us on the podcast.
What time do I have to pick you up?
Whenever you want, pal.
Okay. By the way, this
we'll get some pies.
Yeah. This is, I think, a first in my time around hockey that there's, you know, Edmonton won at home last night. Toronto won at home last night. Winnipeg lost in Anaheim. But we didn't talk hockey. I mean, that's what's phenomenal about this. This was as big as home opening night is in the National Hockey League. It wasn't the story. It wasn't the story.
And I mean, I will tell you, I think we mentioned it during the our time with James. James was booked before all this happened. You know, we are not exactly reacting to an extraordinary night. It's just to our benefit that Sharman had agreed to come on, well, last week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And
I'll check with the producer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that there were hockey games last night, you're right. Under normal circumstances would have dominated the conversation and maybe a mention of the soccer game.
Yeah.
Well, how lucky we were to have Mr. Sharman booked and able to talk about it. Is there anything in 30 seconds you'd like to mention about last night's hockey games?
If I'm the Maple Leafs, I'm concerned. Boy, for the longest period of time, they were gripping the stick a lot tighter than they should have. A team against Montreal, and probably the feel good story out of the Toronto Montreal game had to be the Jonathan Drouin, who had some issues off the ice, mental health issues off the ice last year, was able to score in his returning game in the National Hockey League. It put a smile on my face for a while. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
That'll do it for us. Again, our thanks to James Sharman. We'll have another program for your listening enjoyment tomorrow. You can check out the podcast, as you know, the Bob McCowan podcast, or as an alternative, if you're in your car at 6 p.m. Eastern time, you can flip on channel 167 on Sirius XM radio and hear the very same thing there. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.